It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. Win. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
I know that some in our audience know the finer points of hockey.
The Chris Johnston Show.
We are your friends.
The biggest stories, bringing you inside the game.
What did you hear?
The Chris Johnston Show.
What is going on?
Here's Chris with your host, Julian McKenzie.
Part of the game.
CJ is still in Tempe. He was at the final Arizona Coyotes game yesterday. We'll get to that. But first, let's do a Leafs corner. They just played their final game of the regular season. Auston Matthews does not get to goal number 70. And now, for the Leafs, a series against the Boston Bruins awaits. This is as close as we can get to for a playoff preview between those two teams. I know some people are dreading the possibility of playing against the Boston Bruins, from the Leafs fan vantage point anyway. But let's talk about Auston Matthews and the fact that he did not get to 70. How much of the game were you able to watch yesterday? And what do you think of the fact that he just misses out on a high plateau?
Well, I watched basically the first half before I had to head over to Mullet Arena. And, you know, it wasn't lost on me, kind of the weird juxtaposition. Here you are, you know, I'm sitting 30 minutes from where Auston Matthews was raised, a place where hockey hasn't been traditional. On the night that we're bidding goodbye to the Coyotes from an NHL perspective, and here's a kid from Scottsdale chasing down something that hasn't happened in, you know, 30 plus years. And you know, even though he ends up one goal short, it certainly wasn't for lack of trying. I'm sure you saw the shot off the crossbar, the 10 or 11 shots on goal that Matt Tompkins, kind of an unlikely starter for Tampa, you know, turned away in that game. And, you know, I don't think it's in any way diminishes the season. I mean, obviously when you're that close, like William Nylander, who ends at 99 points, I mean, you like the big round number. But, you know, at the end of the day, a 69-goal season, you haven't seen that since Mario Lemieux. And so, you know, when you're putting yourself in that company, I think, and you step back and look at it, I mean, what a year tip you had. And, you know, most important, I guess, is that he did get his shots at it. You know, I know we talked about it in recent weeks. What are they going to do? How are they going to manage that? I think it was only right that they gave him the chance to play those last two games to you know, have that shot. His parents, Brian and Emma, were in the crowd, were there just in case he could do it. And, you know, he came through it healthy by all accounts. And you know, the Leafs got a couple of days now until they go back into the belly of the beast at TD Garden.
Oh, my God. The way you put it, the belly of the beast. Forgive me for laughing, but, like, you're right. Like, again, Leafs, Bruins, we've seen this in 2013, 2018, 2019. Again, but also, this has to happen. This has to be it. I just give me a second here. I know they're Leafs fans. Just give me a second. Leafs fans. I get it. You hate this. This is how this has to go. Everyone in our lives at some point was afraid of the dark, afraid of the boogeyman, something scary hiding underneath your bed. And at some point in your life, you had to step up and face your fear and get over it, slaying the dragon and all that. This will be so satisfying if this team finds a way to do it against the Boston Bruins. And look, the Bruins, they have a lot to prove in this, too. They lost last year in the first round. They had the best regular season of anyone, and they lost in the first round. They are not going to go down fighting. They're not going to go down crying. But, like, if the Leafs find a way to do it this year, like, it's going to be the most satisfying thing this franchise has had in a long time. Like, maybe it's because I'm an outsider, but, like, if I'm a Leafs fan, this is how I'm approaching the series. I just had to get that off.
That's fair. And, you know, it's funny because it's kind of a tale of two series, right? I mean, for the participants in it, I don't think the spectacle of the Bruins means nearly as much. You know what I mean? There's only five players on the Leafs roster that were even part of those series, you know, in 2018 and 2019, let alone 2013, you know, which is one that still sticks in the memories of Leafs fans. So I think that this is, and I'm certainly not dispelling the fan thing because it's real. Like, I get it. There's some scars there. If you're of a certain age and you've watched this team have to play games in Boston, a lot of them have gone the wrong way. They've lost game sevens there in one-sided fashion in a couple of cases, or dramatic fashion in the 2013 case where they blew that lead in the third period. So, you know, it hangs over the way I think people will experience it. On the inside, I really don't think that part matters quite as much. And, you know, the Leafs are also built a little differently. And you know, it's been kind of a point of discussion for sure, maybe debate in some corners about, you know, having someone like Ryan Reeves on the roster, you know, bringing in Max Domi, Tyler Bertuzzi, players that, you know, I think Brad Treliving, when you go back to last summer, we're hoping would maybe just give a little different element to this team when the games got harder, when the space out there disappeared, when you had to push through, which is what you're here for now. And I think, you know, this Leafs team is, you know, for good or ill, I'm not saying this as a prediction. I really don't know what's going to happen in the series. I don't have a good feel, you know, I'm not being compelled one way or the other, but you know, they're different. I think they are going to stand up physically in the series. And, you know, to me, from the Toronto end of it, it's a question, how does the defense hold up? You know, they've got 9 players back there, but what does the top 6 look like? And is it going to be stout enough? And then obviously goaltending, I think, will be a big storyline. You know, Ilya Samsonov didn't play either the last 2 games for the Leafs here in the regular season this week. I mean, meaningless games by and large, other than some of those milestone achievements. But, you know, the 2 games he started prior to that didn't go so well. And so, you know, which version of the Leafs goaltending will show up, I think we'll probably have a big say in, you know, how this ends up going in the best of 7.
Also, when you look at Austin Matthews in this series, the expectations, of course, have to be high for him. A great regular season for him. We just went off on the goals here, but he has to step up in this series. I know I'm speaking the obvious here, but I'm very curious about how he gets looked at in this series.
Yeah, you know, and I think he's actually, you know, performed pretty well in the playoffs past. You know, to me, he doesn't wear... I mean, look, everyone collectively wears it. You win as a team and lose as a team ultimately in the playoffs. I mean, stats and the like, you know, don't really matter to the same degree and don't get focused on to the same degree in the regular season. I think, you know, for the Leafs, you know, one thing that has eluded them in some of their playoff losses, Florida being a great example, they scored 2 goals in the last 7 games they played in the playoffs last year. And, you know, for a team that has the offensive weapons the Leafs do, that's sort of built, I think, in you know, the original concept was that they could out-offense you, that they were going to give you too many options, that it was going to be difficult to shut them down consistently. You know, that isn't good enough. And so, you know, what's Austin's bread and butter, you know, scoring goals. But, this is where those, you know, what I might call secondary players come into the fold here. I mean, Max Domi and Tyler Bertuzzi, you know, maybe give up a little bit on the defensive end of things from some of the Leafs support players in past years, but, you know, they certainly bring more on the offensive side. And, you know, I think it'll be, you know, kind of 2 things we'll be telling. It's do they keep Matthews with Domi and Bertuzzi, which is kind of what they ran with, you know, throughout March and into April. And it had a lot of success. And I do think it opens up possibilities for other lines, you know, with Marner, Nylander, Tavares, even sometimes seeing those 3 guys play together. But also how the power play goes, you know, because the Leafs power play, for whatever reason, has been very, very good and dominant outright the last 3-4 regular seasons. But when it's been counted on most in the playoffs, it just feels like they've never been able to get a goal here or there. And you know, let's face it, this team, you know, I guess it was a 5-game series loss to Florida last year, so that's the outlier. But it's not like they've been swept in all these playoff runs, right? I mean, they're getting to Game 7 or the Game 5 against Columbus in the best of 5. I mean, they're losing in the smallest of margins, you know, in the last number of years. And so, you know, this is no longer a young team. You know, we might overrate at times, you know, playoff experience. But I mean, the truth is very few teams do just make the playoffs and then go on a run to the cup final. Usually there is a multi-year building process, and the Leafs are getting to late stages in some ways, although, you know, they've now got Matthews and Nylander signed. I don't think the stakes suggest that it's now or never for them as an organization, but man, it's now or never for the next 10 to 14 days. I mean, that's what makes the playoffs so special. And so I'm with you. I think a lot obviously hinges on Matthews' shoulders, but you know, they need some big goals from other places too. You know, it can't all just be going through his stick, because I think that, you know, the teams that tend to have playoff success, you know, get goals down their lineup. You know, the Penguins of 2016 were fueled by a third line in a lot of cases. I mean, Crosby and Malkin had their moments in that run, and Crosby ultimately won the Conn Smythe, but it was Phil Kessel's third line that did a lot of the damage at times. And so I think you have to be mindful of the fact that it isn't always just the stars that, you know, sometimes the stars cancel each other out on both sides. And so I can't wait to get going, man. It's kind of a weird few days, you know, flying back from Arizona to Toronto, doing a load of laundry, and then flying to Boston on Friday, and then right back into it. But
our friend of the show, Joshua Clipperton, put out a tweet the other day. He's a hockey writer for the Canadian Press. He basically called out some of the media members from Toronto, saying that some of you guys prepared for the Leafs to play the Panthers and perhaps did not plan your laundry accordingly. I presume you're not one of those people.
I'm not one, because I was always likely heading home unless something unusual happened. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's, you know, it was 90 degrees Fahrenheit on the Coyotes' last game day on Wednesday. And so obviously I have no shortage of shorts or, you know, summer attire, we'll call it. So had I had to go to Florida, I would have been in good spot. You know, I don't think, I haven't looked at the Boston weather yet, but it can't be that bad. I mean, we're getting into spring in the Northeast here. So, you know, because I was going home, I wasn't one. I think Mark Masters, if we're going to name some names, was packing for that Florida regular season trip to end and expecting to stay in Florida for a few days after.
I love it. We're airing people out. We do have to spend a bit of time on the Bruins here, too. They look like they're going to be the better defensive team going into this, but I'm also intrigued about how they're going to deploy their goalies. We've seen them rotate between Linus Ullmark and Jeremy Swayman before. I haven't seen any indication that they're going to go away from that. But again, another year where their stats look very, very similar. I'm very curious about how the Bruins are going to shape up in this series as well.
Well, I think the strength there is that if it, you know, wherever you start doesn't mean that's where you finish. I think the Leafs are, you know, looking at it the same way. The difference is the Leafs don't have a proven second commodity. I mean, Joseph Woll has had some nice moments early in his NHL career, but it's early in his career. And he, you know, had a significant injury layoff during the season, and hasn't looked the same since coming back late in the year. You know, Martin Jones, full credit to him, helped them in a difficult spot early in the season, won a bunch of games. But, you know, I don't think you want to be in a spot where you're starting him. And so, you know, it's an area where it would look to me the Bruins have an edge in the series. Certainly more experienced players, more accomplished players than Ullmark and Swayman. And, you know, it's funny. It used to be such a big storyline, who's going to start. But I feel like the league has just gone so often now where, I mean, of the 16 teams in the first round, we could see 10 play two goalies. Maybe it'll even be more than that. And I don't mean just one goalie coming in because a game gets out of hand and mop-up duty. I mean, like, you know, starting one and then starting the other guy at some point in the series. And, you know, that used to be a sign that things were maybe off the rails, or that your season was, you were desperate. But I think in today's NHL, the thinking has shifted, and the Bruins are a good example of that. I mean, they did at least consider, I think, moving Ullmark at the deadline. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know how close it ultimately got. He does have, you know, limited no trade protection in his contract, and I don't think he wanted to move on, but, you know, they thought of ways that they might be able to improve other parts of the roster by taking away from that spot. Ultimately didn't end up doing so, and you know, that would be an area where I'd say the Bruins, you know, heading in, look like they have a clear edge in that department. And you know, those guys are going to be asked a lot. I mean, Boston's had a fantastic year. I mean, they were leading the Atlantic Division most of the season, got clipped at the wire by Florida there. But, you know, I don't see them as being offensively, you know, as gifted as where the Leafs are at this stage in time. And so that's where goaltending and defensive play are really going to matter. And, you know, it's going to be an interesting series, brother.
Oh, it absolutely is. I don't know. Do you care to give a prediction? I'm willing to give you the out if you don't want to give it.
I'm taking the out.
That's fine.
It's not even about not wanting to rile people up. I just have no clue what's going to happen. No idea. I mean, I'll tell you this. You know, I'm working with Harmon, the writer in The Athletic and out of Vancouver, on doing Stanley Cup contenders tier story, where we each are talking to scouts and GMs and executives from around the league and having them rank the 16 teams in tiers. Based on what calls I've made, and I haven't seen Harmon's results just yet, this will be coming out before the start of the playoffs. Obviously the Leafs were rated higher on the executive list than the Bruins. So, I mean, you know, at least some of the people around the league, I would read into that, see the Leafs as more of a threat to win the Cup than Boston. That maybe isn't the exact same as picking them head to head in a series, as strange as that might sound. But, you know, this year the playoffs feel like a coin flip. I think that story, again, we haven't averaged all the numbers yet, but I think that story is going to underline the fact that there's like four or five teams that a lot of people think could win, and the Leafs are probably in the next group beneath that. And, you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter what any of us think. They have to go out and do it. And, you know, the way you flip a narrative is you produce a different result. And then all of a sudden people will be talking about you differently. You'll be remembered differently. And the path you took to get there will be part of the charm. It won't be part of it won't be viewed as a bug of your team or your makeup or those types of things.
For sure. We look forward to your coverage at The Athletic of that first round series. Someone between those two teams is going to exercise some demons. The Bruins, again, they had the best record in the regular season ever last year, only to lose to the eventual Eastern Conference champion. They go up against the Toronto Maple Leafs. You already know their story. You already know the background. You've seen it for the last how many years when it comes to this franchise. There's a chance for demons to be exercised, and we will see it play out in the Stanley Cup playoffs. I'm looking forward to that.
Well, do you know what we didn't talk about is, you know, at some point in time, it will be the end of the line for the Bruins. And, you know, again, I tip my chapeau to them for the way that they've managed to carry on through, you know, Chara moving to other teams and retiring, losing their top two centers in Krejci and Bergeron after last season. But, you know, Brad Marchand is not getting any younger. I mean, they don't have as many guaranteed years where I think that they can count on being a top contender. I mean, I suppose the nature of sports, next year, sometimes it doesn't come. You know, you can't always say you're going to get better. You're going to take a step forward. You can't assume too much. But the stakes are pretty high for them after that regular season last year and the way things went down against the Panthers. I mean, this for some of their core players, it's not like David Pastrnak's going anywhere. I know Charlie McAvoy. I mean, they're signed long term. They're still in years where I think they're going to be top performers. But you just don't know what's going to come in the next wave behind them. And so, you know, I think in a strange way, it might matter a little bit more in Boston. I mean, everything in Toronto takes on life of its own. So it'll be blown up in a way that maybe it won't be in Boston. But this, you know, the stakes for the Bruins this spring are pretty strong because, you know, you just feel like every year they come back, you don't know, maybe are they just getting a little marginally worse, a little marginally older? And, you know, are they a team that you know, is maybe going to slide a little bit out of the picture in the next couple of years?
Well, one other name we didn't really get to in the Leafs conversation is Mitch Marner, because Austin Matthews finds ways to perform in the playoffs. But I feel like, at least from an outsider's perspective, Mitch Marner gets a lot of flack for some of the games that he's played. And I think some of it's deserved throughout his time with the Leafs in the playoffs as well. Like, this has to be a legacy series for him too.
It's deserved, but it's overblown, right? I mean, he plays under an especially fine microscope where I think people are literally watching every shift and reading into every play and seeing each giveaway as like a, you know, an example of what they want to believe. Or, you know, I mean, we're talking about still a top player in the league. You know, I think where, you know, what's happened to Mitch is that, you know, there are times in the playoffs where certainly the production's gone away on him. You know, you can see it affecting him. I mean, no one is at all, at least that I think, is either paying attention or spent time around him, doesn't think he doesn't want to win, isn't giving his all to win, you know. But, you know, it's hard in the playoffs. Like, that's just the reality. I mean, you can go through the stats of any great player, even the ones that have won, and go year by year. There are just years where the goals or assists don't fall. I mean, you don't have time. You don't always have time to balance out the good luck with the bad luck, which you do over a season. You know, players go through stretches where the production is not there, but if you play long enough, the numbers, if you're good enough, usually end up where they're supposed to be. You know, and in Mitch's case, I think he's been on the wrong end of some of those things. And, you know, when I talk about things like the power play not clicking in the playoffs, I mean, that's an area where he can get, you know, usually if when the Leafs play out, power play is having success, he's in the middle of it, you know, making a feed. You know, we've seen him score a little bit more in the last couple of seasons where he's been more of a shooter. You know, certainly if he could get some goals early in the series or some points on the board, it might ease some of the pressure. But, you know, the reality is he's a hometown guy. I think he wears it heavy a little bit. You know, I think sometimes the attention and the focus and social media and kind of the mania that surrounds a team, you know, he feels that. But certainly by no means do I think it's not all on him, but he's certainly going to be in the middle of everything as we go through this.
Okay, again, be sure to check out CJ's work at The Athletic for this Leafs Brood series. It's funny, we started by talking about the Leafs Lightning game. Obviously, Austin doesn't get 70, but Nikita Kucherov gets assist number 100. Now's a good time to, you know, make sure that you submitted your ballot for the NHL Awards this year, Siege, because we still have to, I mean, I still have to figure out who I'm picking for the MVP. I wonder, for Nikita Kucherov, where he fits in the discussion for MVP. Is he second? Is he third? Does him getting the 100th assist matter in all of this to you? I would love to know your thoughts.
I think he's the favorite, to be honest. I mean, the guy leads the league in points. He's got 50-odd more points than the next guy on his team. He's in on 50% of their goals over a season. He hits that 100-point or 100-assist plateau. I mean, to me, all those things, you know, we can twist ourselves in knots, but all those things to me suggest he's the likely top candidate. Now, I have got no idea how voters around the continent feel and beyond. And obviously, as we've discussed in recent weeks, it's not an easy call. It's not an easy choice for people to make. I'm not going to come on here if someone has Nathan MacKinnon first and say, how could you do that? Or, you know, Austin Matthews, maybe even Connor McDavid, Connor Hellebuck, all the guys we've talked about. I mean, I don't think there's necessarily a one right answer, but for me, you know, I haven't submitted my ballot, but, you know, I'm leaning very, very heavily towards Kucherov number one for the Hart Trophy. And, you know, it's difficult for me not to look at the wording of the award where you're trying to identify the player most valuable to his team and see the impact that Kucherov had in Tampa this year. And, you know, he also led the league in points. I mean, and wasn't doing it just with one line mate. I mean, he certainly got some talented teammates and guys who still finished top 30, top 40 in league scoring, but, you know, he was, you know, over and above everyone. And, you know, I do think that ultimately he deserves to win it, but, you know, we're not going to find out until June 27th when the awards are given out, how our peers feel. And, you know, for anyone who doesn't know how the process works, I mean, we are down to the final days here to vote. You know, the ballots have to be submitted before the start of the playoffs, you know, so as anything that happens on day one of the playoffs or beyond is not factored into how the voting goes. But, you know, just a superlative season from Kucherov. And you know, I think he really accomplished something special. I thought it was pretty cool to see the way his teammates celebrated with him when he got that 100th assist. You know, it was clear that it's something they took a lot of pride in. And, you know, it is kind of a weird one, right? I mean, with Austin Matthews, when he's chasing 70, like, he's got to shoot the puck into the net to make it happen with an assist. And I know Kucherov can throw, you know, passes into the high slot there, and Braden Point's pretty good at burying those. But, you know, he still needs someone else to ultimately be the one who beats the goaltender. And so, you know, it is a team accomplishment in some respects. And I sort of felt like I saw that in watching the way the Bolts reacted when he hit that big milestone.
Man, I haven't submitted my ballot either, and I'm racking my brain over this. Do I vote for the guy who was an automatic point getter at home every year, who was obviously very near the top of the points leaderboard? Do I vote for the leader in points? Do I vote for the other guy who got 100 assists in a season and helped his team bring them up from the depths of hell at the beginning of the year to now, where they're a clear playoff team? Do I vote for the guy who almost hit 70 this year? Who's going to be fifth on my ballot? Like, I've only been voting for what, maybe 2 years at this? This is such a difficult MVP race to call. I mean, I think it's more between the first three guys I'm alluding to, but I don't know how people are going to decide. And I get that everyone's going to have their reasons and picks, but, like, for me, I'm going to be thinking about this up until the wire. Like, I can't make a decision right now. It's too difficult. It's too hard.
Yeah. I mean, the hard thing for me is you want to do it justice. You want history to be reflected in a certain way that's, you know, when someone looks back on the 2023-24 season, that we've identified the right winner. I mean, quite honestly, there's always outlier votes. There's always votes that get dragged on the internet. But I think as a whole, the voting body does a really good job of getting it as close to right as you can. I mean, sometimes there isn't one right answer. I think that's ultimately where I'm going to land here. Like, one player is going to win the Hart. I mean, maybe an entirely different person will win the Ted Lindsay, right, which is voted on by the players for their most outstanding player. I mean, I think that'll be an interesting vote. I could quite honestly, I don't have any expectation that Austin Matthews will win the Hart. I could see Austin Matthews winning the Ted Lindsay that you know, his peers have that level of respect. I mean, you look at adjusted for era goal seasons, that's the second all-time season in terms of production by a player. And you know, Austin had a few goals called back by offside reviews this year. He had, I think he hit 20 posts and crossbars or something. I mean, he wasn't that far away from doing something just insane. And 69 goals, frankly, is insane. So, I mean, I guess my point is this. I'm not lobbying a case for Austin Matthews for the Hart, but I'm just saying that I think that lots of people can look at this and come up with different results and still not necessarily be wrong. And so, you know, at the end of the day, I'm going with my, no pun intended, I'm going with my heart, with my head. I'm going with like where my intuition takes me. And my, you know, my thoughts are that Kucherov was the guy, really helped Tampa through a tough start to the year. And, you know, clearly pulled their team through from an offensive standpoint. There's no way to question that. I know that you might break down, oh, he had 14 empty net points or this or that. I mean, the guy still ended up at 140 plus points, 100 assists, and, you know, the Lightning trudge on, I think, in large part because of what he was able to do.
All right. Well, to everyone listening and watching, don't be mad at us when the ballots come out. It was a very difficult process to determine who the Hart Trophy winner will be. And of course, for some of the
I want you to be mad as hell. Go to JK McKenzie on Twitter and just tell him all the things that you didn't like about his ballot. Because, I mean, look at the Norris. There's a debate in the Norris voting, I would say. You know, even the Calder voting, you could have, you know, there's some Brock Faber stands out there, obviously. You know, Connor Bedard missed some times. I mean, none of these are easy. The Selke, like, it's not. The job is not meant to be easy. The best thing is we cover league with like insanely talented players, and a lot of them brought their best this year. And we got to sort through the wreckage of that and try to make some sense of it.
Go to reporter Chris and be mad at him too. Okay,
that's okay.
Let's talk.
I can take it.
Me too. Anyway, let's go to Arizona. You were at the final game for the Arizona Coyotes against the Edmonton Oilers on Wednesday night. I tried to watch as much as I could on the broadcast on Sportsnet. And I have to admit, I know some people have made the allusion to this too. I definitely got Montreal Expos vibes watching that. Just the end of an era for a team. And seeing the players at the end get on the ice and hugging the longtime trainer Stan Wilson. Seeing the final salute from broadcaster Todd Walsh. I feel bad. I feel really awful for those Coyotes fans. What was it like for you at Mullet Arena, experiencing everything, watching the game? Take us through it.
It's one of those nights where you understand why the team was here in the first place, because there really is a community around this Coyotes team. You know, as I mentioned at the top, it's happening on a night where a guy from Scottsdale is chasing 70 goals down. You know, you got Josh Doan in the game, whose dad Shane played in the first ever Coyotes game, and he's had such a promising start to his career. You know, you can understand why the Coyotes were here, but then I can understand why they're leaving. Because quite honestly, step inside the Mullet Arena for the first time, as I did on Wednesday, and see the game played. I mean, it would lose its charm pretty quickly. Like, I could see, like, it's flat out cool to watch Connor McDavid from the 13th row, which is the last row in that building. So, like, there's not a bad seat to watch, to see how fast these guys are, how big they are. I mean, most of us don't get to sit in a lower bowl at an NHL game ever. And, you know, even if you get, you're lucky to get in a building. And even if you do, you might be way up in the ceiling and it looks like a chessboard rather than the sea of bodies it is at ice level. But I mean, it's just not a facility that was going to be able to house hockey for too long. So I can understand why they're leaving when I see it and understand just how far they are from getting an arena built in this area. I have to say Tempe itself is awesome.
Yes.
I mean, the proposed site where, you know, they were voted down in the referendum last May, you know, it was only about a mile from where I'm sitting right now. And like, if they were able to build an awesome arena district there, I mean, again, there would be no one in the league who wouldn't want to do road trips out here. To experience the weather, the vibes on the campus at Arizona State University. Like it's you know, it's a cool spot, but you know, I felt bad for everyone too. There's a human side to this, and that's what I was seeing kind of behind the scenes. You know, the first intermission, I went up to the suite level and there's just a line of people waiting for selfies, for a handshake, for a hug with Shane Doan. even a few old school people asking for autographs up there. I saw Russell Martin, former Blue Jay.
Really?
Among other. Yeah, Russell Martin, he lives out here now. He was chatting with Shane Doan, talking about their families. You know, a lot of people with a Kleenex in their hand up there, like the people that have been working behind the scenes that have, you know, done a lot of various jobs for the Coyotes maybe over the years. And you just, it felt like a little bit like family. Honestly, it felt almost like a receiving line at a wake or something. It wasn't all sad, honestly. Even, you know, I had a chance to chat with Shane. Like he was saying, for him, he was trying to focus on all the great memories that he had. He said he viewed this as sort of the end of this chapter of the Coyotes, but he's hoping, you know, hockey in Arizona, you know, that there will be a much longer book in time. You know, he even talked about what he told his son, Josh. You know, remember, Shane played 1 year with the original Winnipeg Jets after being drafted. He was a young kid when the team moved here and obviously became a franchise legend. He has the most games, the most goals, the most assists, the most points, the most everything. Probably the most selfies and autographs signed over the years, too, because he's such a fan favorite here. But he told his son, Josh, who grew up, obviously, in Scottsdale as a Coyotes fan. He's, I'm sure some level for him is heartbroken as he moves to Salt Lake City. But he said, Josh, I came here. I didn't know anything about Arizona. Like, and look what this became. Like, look how special this was. This is where we raised our family and we made all these roots. You know, who knows what Salt Lake, no one knows what the future holds. I mean, maybe one day we're talking about Josh Doan in that way in Salt Lake City. Like, it's, anything's possible. And so, you know, it was a weird night. It did not feel like a funeral in the building. Like, it felt like a hockey game, like just in the stands, watching the game itself. You know, the Coyotes really wanted to go out on a high note. And I thought they played their asses off and, you know, they got a win that, you know, doesn't matter in the standings, but I think it says something about them as a group. You know, they won three of their last four games after all this, you know, broke. And the other game they lost was the one you saw in Calgary where they were ahead in the third period and, you know, couldn't quite hold on to a lead. But I mean, they play hard to the end. They gave the fans something to cheer about on the last night. They, you know, they did have that nice moment where they're saluting them and ultimately did that sort of jerseys off your back thing. They had all the fans stream onto the ice and, you know, it's a night of mixed emotions and, you know, this franchise just never quite got it right from a big picture standpoint, but a lot of people had to, like, I think there's a larger lesson the Coyotes taught us in a sense is that they had to make do with less than other people had. And they did make some good out of it. I mean, they clearly have a close bond here you know, I've gotten to know the hockey community down in Arizona a little bit because I've covered Auston Matthews first 8 years in the NHL pretty closely. And you know, there really is. There's a thriving hockey community here. It hasn't been serviced properly by the people that have owned and run the organization over multiple ownership groups over a long period of time. And that's how you get to a night like last night and a day like today where, you know, by the time this episode's out, you probably will have heard the news that the NHL's Board of Governors has ratified the move to Salt Lake City. Mm-hmm. You know, there's going to be a press conference there in the next couple of days with Gary Bettman. Won't be long before the Coyotes players and staff are traveling there and sizing up their new accommodations. You know, we'll kind of move on with life. They'll unveil a sweater and a name and all the, like, you know, we'll move on. But the Coyotes really left something behind here. And there's a hockey community and we haven't seen the last Arizona born player to play in the league. I know that much. I mean, this is a thriving minor hockey area and a lot of players retire here and therefore, you know, pass along what they've learned to the next generation. And, you know, I look forward to the day I can come back to see a new team being born because it was, you know, it was a sad night. And I just know a lot of people put a lot into it. I mean, there's so many staff of the team, like we don't have to spend too much time on this. Like, it's not nice. If you've ever been part of a company that's been maybe merged with another one or maybe even relocated like this, in this case, like there's a lot of people that are not earning the NHL player salaries that don't know their future and that, you know, are kind of making some jokes, you know, the kind of gallows humor that you'd expect, but like, hope my key card works tomorrow and all this stuff, because, you know, I don't know if you saw this, Julian, Shane Doan got his banner given back to him.
I saw that. That is insane. Like, so you mean
what
so,
happened
you
know, there?
Tell the story, please.
I've been in touch with the gentleman who returned it to him. And basically it was in a storage area somewhere in the rink. And I guess they were just getting rid of anything Coyotes. Like, I'm not saying the building wanted to, I don't know if it's ownership or who instructed that. And he noticed the Doan banner and he he saved it and ultimately repatriated it to Shane. Shane said it's massive. I asked him, like, are you going to put that up in your house? He's like, I have no idea. He's like, it's too big. Like, but, you know, it's so bizarre to me at a time. I mean, look, that might just be an oversight. Like, I don't want to make too much of it because, like, I don't know how exactly it ended up there. But it did. It does appear it was destined for the garbage if it wasn't saved. And, you know, it's just such a shame that the team wasn't managed better, that even details like that wouldn't be preserved, because, you know, ultimately Alex Morello or someone else is probably going to try to bring back a team. They might end up being called the Coyotes. You think you'd want that, some of those pieces of history, but, you know, it was a franchise that just never got it right. But as I said, that doesn't mean everything was wrong. You know what I mean? And so I think on a night like that, you feel that weird feeling, because lots of people who might not otherwise have liked hockey were in that building, liking hockey, crying, commiserating together, going to bars after the game to sort of, you know, share their experiences, as you do often after a wake. As I say, it did felt a little bit like, it wasn't all sad, but it was, you know, it was heavy. It was heavy. And, you know, this is a great place to live, and they just got to get it right next time. I don't think there's much more for me to say than that. They just got to get it right the next time. And, you know, Salt Lake City is going to be an interesting experiment. I don't think it's a slam dunk by any means that this is, you know, they're moving into, I think it'll be the third oldest building in the league right away. It's a smaller city, you know, seems like an owner everyone speaks highly of in Ryan Smith, but, you know, it's going to be a challenge to get it right there. And, you know, they kind of solve one, like, there's a clean break here, because it just felt like it was dragging on forever and it was never going to be fixed. But, you know, there's still work to be done as they arrive in Salt Lake City as well.
By the way, shout out to Alex Morello, who, according to on the floor reports, he was not even able to show up for his team's final game.
Now, there weren't many signs, but I saw three or four signs directly, you know, about Morello, like, you know, some kind of not flattering Morello thing. I mean, I get it. He didn't make a lot of friends in the community. He, you know, angered trade unions. He angered, didn't pay all his bills in the previous stop. And it looks like he's making out like a bandit, right? So I can see why as a fan, or even, you know, quite frankly, people within the organization, I can see why they feel that he didn't service them at all and wasn't looking out for the betterment of the product. This is what's weird about sports, right? At the end of the day, it is just a business. It's, you know, the owner has to be making money or has to believe that they're going to make money over time in order to stay in that business. But there's also, you're asking for people's sort of a piece of the people that pay for your business, right? The community and things like that. And, you know, so I think that those are the people that feel really let down. And as a result, he wasn't in the building.
Absolutely. Be sure to check out CJ's piece on that last game. It's called Coyotes Say Goodbye, Close Chapter in Arizona Before Salt Lake City Relocation. I just want to say the opening line really got me of that story. They gathered one last time here together, because that's what you do when your heart is breaking and your mind is racing. That line just, I don't know why it did, but it got to me. So I just want to give you your flowers for that, because that's a really good piece. And you can read that.
Sadly, it was written at a far too late hour with like 10% of brain power. I mean, we've all been there. This is part of the job. But like, sometimes it's been a busy few days down here. Honestly, I told you, I think I've shared with the pod, I was coming here to do a totally different story. I didn't anticipate this was all going to blow up on the timeline that it did. I did anticipate this was the last Coyote season, but I was going to come down to kind of maybe before the storm to tell some stories that were a little more calm. But it was difficult. And you know, I think everyone did the best they could under the circumstances. I got to say the players were all really generous with their time last night. Andre Trigny, to me, is someone I haven't spent a lot of time around, the head coach of the team, but man, that guy could coach my team any day. What a passionate guy. And you know, I know he's well thought of from the hockey standpoint, but really, like, I thought he was the right person. You know, he had to be at the front lines every day, right? You know, because some parts of this, they kept the players away from the media because they just didn't know what can the players say. Nothing's official yet. They know what the questions are going to be. It was just an awkward spot for a few days. But Trigny, I thought, in the face of everything that went on here, was just, I mean, what a leader. No wonder he's, you know, they want to keep him in Salt Lake City. He's going to, He would have a number of teams knocking at his door if they didn't. But, you know, I think he's going to go to Salt Lake with the team.
Absolutely. Do you have a stick tap as we wrap up our episode?
Well, we'd be missing the boat if we saw Jeff Carter play his last NHL game. Given what he's meant to the pod, given that he inadvertently became part of, you know, part of what we do here and the fun we have with our 100%ers. I mean, Jeff Carter had a hell of a career, and he's hanging it up. So maybe I stole the obvious one. I guess we maybe double stick tap it from both of us to the people that poured their heart into the Yotes over the years. We'll pour one out for them, and then we'll raise a glass to Jeff Carter. Cause I mean, it's just sitting there on the tee for us, pal.
I mean, it's right there. Seriously. I didn't even, we didn't even think about it. I just knew he was going to get shouted out between you and I. So I'm glad we had that shout out, and I'm glad we were able to also do a double stick tap for everyone in Arizona, whether it's anyone who worked with the team, whether it's anyone like Craig Morgan, who's covered the team for quite some time, the fans there. Look, it's
that's
never
Steve
easy
Peters, who I met down here, worked for years as a video coach and was working in media with Craig, you know, down here. Patrick Brown was the team reporter. Just such a nice guy, doesn't know what his future holds. I mean, it sucks, man. Like you can only put yourself in the position of these people who've poured a lot of their own time and energy into it. It just flat out sucks. You know, the business of pro sports can be pretty cruel. And this feels cruel, even though I totally understand why the Coyotes are leaving. Don't get me wrong. As I said, if I had to go to a second game at Mullet Arena, that might be one too many. Just because it really is just not a facility that Connor McDavid should be playing actual games in, or his peers, not just Connor. But I do feel for all these folks that I met that were just so kind these last few days.
For sure. I'll also, maybe it might be too soon to do, but Salt Lake City fans, you're getting an NHL team that looks like it's going to be promising. Word coming down, I'm just reading off a Darren Dreger tweet that Ryan Smith is supposed to meet with Coyotes players and staff in Arizona today. Assuming everything goes well with the Board of Governors and the approval of that move, there could be some exciting times ahead for that city. And there are fans in that market who want to get behind that team too. And they have a history with hockey as well through teams like the Utah Grizzlies of the ECHL. It's an exciting time for them too. And, you know, hopefully they're able to treasure that team and do the best with it. I'm excited to see what turns out with the team, but also just keep a thought for the Arizona fans today. I think that's going to do it for our Thursday edition of the CJ Show. Get your questions in for Monday, whether on Discord or on Twitter, and subscribe to the podcast if you haven't done so already. CJ, great work as always. Be sure to follow his work at The Athletic. I'm Julian. We'll talk to you guys on Monday.
Playoffs?
The Chris Johnston Show. Inside the game, twice a week. Follow Chris on Twitter, @ReporterChris. And follow Julian McKenzie, @JKMcKenzie.